Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. The following interview is designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be. Your host, Derek Champagne, is the founder and CEO of The Artist Evolution, a full-service agency building successful brands, marketing tools, and campaigns, and also the author of the best-selling book, Don't Buy a Duck. And now, let's begin today's Leadership Series interview.
Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where our goal is to inspire you to become the best leader that you can be. We've got a treat today. We've got Ross Cully in the house, in our studio. He is the CEO and co-founder of The Harvest Group. Welcome today, buddy.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You have you guys are doing some really cool things. You have, you're the leader in sales agency division of the company, and then you develop high-performing teams, strategic plans that deliver remarkable growth for your clients. And you guys have a really cool culture there. Tell me a little bit, kind of take me back a little bit about what was your vision when you started The Harvest Group?
Yeah, sure. So, when I started my career, I started with Procter & Gamble. And so in the CPG industry, great place to start. And decided after a couple of years to jump into small business. And that's where I met my co-founder at The Harvest Group. And so really in the industry that we're at, CPG, in the region that we live in, Arkansas, Walmart and Sam's Club is a pretty big deal, as
right.
you know.
Yes.
And so when we looked at our industry space, we really just saw an opportunity. And it was really my business partner, Bill Waitsman, that saw it. But, 10 years ago when we were founded, small and mid-sized manufacturers that were trying to break into retail, there wasn't a lot of solutions for them to get in. And they were competing against a lot of the big companies that had put resources up against the retailer. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of a David and Goliath situation. And so the solution providers that were in the space, there's not a great reputation for our industry.
Right.
And so it's kind of over promise, under deliver, reputation. And so we wanted to build a company that could kind of slide in there and help small and mid-sized companies grow their business at retailers like Walmart and Sam's Club. But do that in a way that, we always did what we said we were going to do, that we, really did perform, at a level that their competition was performing at. And so when you have a small brand that goes up against a P&G or a Kraft or a General Mills, we wanted to bring a team and capability that was at the same level.
Wow, that's cool. So what made you decide or have the confidence to go out on your own after the career that you had, very successful? But, you know, a lot of people have ideas and they see that some solutions or problems and ability to do it a different way, but they don't follow through with that vision. What was that point where you said, I'm going to do this? And what did that feel like?
Yeah, I wouldn't describe it as confidence. So, so really, it's an interesting story. My wife and I had been married 3 months, when we started The Harvest Group. And so it was really a very tense decision for me. And so for me and my, my life, my faith is a big part of who I am. And so, it was something that we definitely were wrestling through and praying through and asking God what we should do,
right.
As we were starting, you know, our marriage. And so the night I decided to start The Harvest Group, I was literally in my living room floor, fetal position, crying, you know, like, is this really what I'm supposed to be doing? We actually were joking with our kids not too long ago, saying, you know, it wasn't before you guys were born, it wasn't too long ago that dad was at home waiting for mom to come home from work, and yeah. he was cooking dinner. And so,
right.
you know, that those startup stories where you have an idea and that's it. And so
yeah.
that was that night was the moment that we decided it was a step of faith for us. We certainly, I wish it was like the confidence in myself
right.
story, but it's actually, a humbling detail of our story that I remember back to quite a
yeah.
bit. I think the other thing for me was certainly having a partner. There was a lot of confidence I had in joining up with Bill, because when we started Harvest, I was quite young. I was 26. And
oh.
so, Bill was a mentor and a friend and somebody that gave me confidence to take that leap of faith.
Wow. That's exciting. I've have some similar stories with starting this company as well. So I wasn't maybe crying in the fetal position, but maybe in a different position, but I can relate to that. And yeah, you're right. So many go out and start it with valor and a different kind of energy, but you're very strategic too, aren't you?
Yeah, I do enjoy thinking that way.
Okay. So I got to know when you had that vision that night and made that decision. We talked to somebody yesterday who their journey started here and then it ended over here. And it was just this amazing story, different than they thought, but they had this vision and they stayed true to it. Mm-hmm. What has yours been like? Mine's been filled with surprises and I've been places that I didn't expect to be in good ways.
Right.
But tell me, how's it evolved for you where you started that first day with that vision and where you are now?
Yeah. For me, it's more unfolded as a journey. And so it's not been a well thought out plan that hasn't changed and we've stayed committed to it. And so I do enjoy thinking strategically, but in my makeup and just who I am, I also do enjoy living by faith and being able to take steps before I can see it all and letting circumstances play out. And so for us, when we started, you know, day one was, you know, literally going and getting cell phones and computers and, you know, we were at
the easy part, right?
Yeah, the dining room table and those things. Originally we wanted to start a very small company. We had in our mind less than 10 people, shorts and flip flops, you know, kind of a real chill lifestyle business.
Right.
And, as we got started, we just had a lot more growth momentum behind our idea and we attracted some really talented people and we had to decide as owners, how do we want to approach the growth that's coming our way and the talent that was coming our way. And we just decided that we felt like we were supposed to steward that growth well. Right. And so we began, our vision began to shift. And so that's when we spent some intentional time saying, man, what is our mission going to be? Where are we headed? And we decided that we wanted to be an organization that was going to grow and enable our people to grow. And that was a real principal motivator, quite honestly, for us was to see the people that were coming into our company and saying, wow, we'd really love for those people to have a career at the Harvest Group.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be able to reach their potential if we don't grow and there's not opportunities for them to grow.
Wow, that's great. So that's my next question is tell me about the culture. You guys have a unique culture. You're known for that. How did you intentionally create that? And what do you do to water and facilitate that?
Sure. Yeah. We're a very mission, vision, values driven organization. And so here locally in Arkansas, out of John Brown University, there's a great organization called the Sutterquist Center that helped us frame that.
Oh.
And so our mission, our vision and values really drive a lot of our decisions. And in that mission is a unique aspect of the Harvest Group in that we're a faith-based company. And so our mission statement is to glorify God by growing our clients' business. We're in the professional services firm, in enabling our people to grow. Kind of what I referred to earlier, wanting to be a company that really helps our people grow. And so that faith-based aspect really is driven from, for me personally, as a follower of Jesus, just wanting to do everything in my life to be oriented toward Him. And that kind of language, glorify God, is just kind of fancy. Or make God bigger, make things more than just what it appears to be at the surface. And so that's really drives how we serve our clients. And so there's no better motivator for me, not money, not keeping them as a client. There's no better motivator than for me to try to do my work unto God as a spiritual person. And so it drives how we do work. It drives how we interact with one another, our clients, the choices we make. And so it's a big part of who we are. In terms of cultivating that, we're very intentional about really training on that as people join our organization. We have quarterly team meetings where we tell stories where we've seen each other live out our values. Oh, and so
nice.
We have a belief that if your values are your values, you'll have stories to tell of when you've lived them out and it's cost you something. And so those are the stories we try to tell on one another, catch each other living out our values and let that continue to spur us on towards those things.
I love that. That's really cool. Thanks for sharing it. That's a unique angle. It must make everybody more unified together too.
Yeah, it is. It is a unifying thing and it provides a lot of clarity, you know, when those tough decisions come. And so you know, we've had to, for instance, resign our largest client due to a values issue without a replacement. Wow. And so our year-end meeting that year was a potluck. And so it cost us something.
But let me ask you, is it that easy? I mean, I've got scars of failure and setbacks, and I might challenge you on that, but tell me in that moment though, what do you, cause I like getting down to the, I mean, I'm an optimist to a fault.
Sure.
But I also like to pause for a second and go, okay, well at that moment, yes, I understand the outcome and what you're going to do. And that's admirable. But in that actual moment, when you make that decision, when there's that self-doubt or when there's that second guessing yourself, what is that moment like? I mean, you don't have to harp on that, but how do you quickly come out of that and say, we did the right thing and then just move on past it?
Yeah. Great question. For us, it was, we should have made the decision a long time ago.
Yeah.
So just to, you know, be transparent, there you go. Yeah. It wasn't, you know, I don't want to puff us up as like, man, we made the right decision immediately. It was something that we wrestled with quite a bit because of the magnitude of it. And, right. and at the time, the youth of our company, it felt like almost the company could be at risk.
Well, you're also trying to take care of the company, as you stated earlier, and take care of the people.
Right.
So how do you balance
yeah.
that?
Yeah. But I would say just through those discussions and through those values and that mission statement that we aligned on, it informed that decision to where ultimately we made the right decision. Okay. In the moment, certainly there's doubt, there's fear. But you know, I think, something that in our culture, we don't always recognize is fear and doubt are part of faith. And right. so faith isn't always this like 100% certain feeling or sense. And so for us, walking by faith sometimes means, man, I'm walking in fear and doubt of that decision I just made. But as we persevered through that, it was interesting just kind of in my worldview, what God did, you know, within a few weeks, we had a new client that approached us that replaced a lot of that business that we ended up resigning.
Mm. Wow. Thanks for sharing. I appreciate you being so open about that.
Sure.
So tell me a little bit about work-life balance. You guys talk about that. That's part of your, how do you actually practice that? How are you productive? How do you get the workaholics among you to step back? How do you meet production? Client demands in this business and your business are pretty high.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very demanding. We're in a similar line of work, so we understand. How do you actually practice that balance?
Is my wife going to be hearing this?
No,
podcast?
Mine is. So she wants an answer. How should we practice it? Yes, I should ask.
Yes. Yeah. For me, that work-life balance question is an interesting one, because I think the paradigm of how we think about it sometimes is a little off. And so in my opinion, how I've looked at it and how I've had mentors encourage me to look at it is, it's not going to be this clean break or line that's right. driven throughout our life. It's going to move and it's like a river. It's going to, you know, take its own course at different seasons. And so I try to, and we try to ask our people to pay attention to that. And so there's times in a lot of industries, certainly in a professional services client, service industry where you're just going to have demands that are more than what can fit into what you'd prefer your life to look
right.
like. And so take count of what time it is, what season is it? And then the part that folks like my personality, it sounds like yours as well, maybe have trouble with is reorienting when it's not that time.
Absolutely.
And giving ourselves freedom to leave work early, to, for me, you know, have a cup of coffee with Kate after it dropped the kids off right. to school, go for a run in the middle of the day. Right. I think some of us with our personalities can feel guilty about that. Or
I think
our
we forget too. We forget we can do that.
Yeah. We forget.
I went home complaining to my wife the other day and said, I need some silence to do some of the deep work. And she said, the house is quiet all day. And I said, I never even thought about going, I own the company. I never even thought I could leave for a few hours. I mean, we go on dates and we, you know, sure. go to school, but it was an aha moment. I guess I could come home and work for a few hours.
Right. right? Well, and you add the season of life that I'm in with small kids, and it does, it complicates things even more. And so I think, I've tried to just be creative about how I do that. But I also have woken up several times and like, I thought that's why I started this. You know, that's why I own right. a small business right. is for that freedom. And so I think there is this lulling to sleep that can sometimes happen with us. And so for us, as leaders, one, I just try to model it. You know, I try to leave on time and come into work late sometimes so that people can see that they have the freedom and the right. permission to be flexible. But then also hold each other accountable and have discussions. You know, we have our people turn in their vacation tracker. And it's not really principally if we've hired right, to see if they took more vacation. It's actually to identify some of the people in our organization who don't take their vacation and say, hey, what's going on here? Is there a client expectation that's outside of scope? Is there a personal expectation that's outside of scope? Have we resourced the business correctly? What's going on here? And so we're guilty of all of those things, you know, have come up. And so I think it's just pay attention to it and be intentional and make sure you don't fall asleep to it.
Right. So what are you passionate about? What are you most passionate about in your life?
Easily my faith is something that's important to me. And so I've followed Jesus since I was a young kid, and I've had different seasons of how that's looked in my life. And there's definitely been seasons where it's not been as important to me, and I've lived counter to his teachings. But for me, that undergirds, it's who I am. It's, he, in my worldview, is my creator, my best friend. He's the answer, to a lot of the questions that we ask in life. And, for me personally, I uniquely enjoy the intersection of faith and work, because I think that, the Bible is actually a great business book. And I don't mean that in a sacrilegious way, but, I think there's great principles in there for how we do business, and it's not, good in a moral sense, but bad in a business sense. I mean, it's good in a moral sense and good from a business sense. And so, I hopefully on my best days am the same Ross when I'm at home, you know, when I'm at work, when I'm at church. And so that's easily the most important thing in my life.
Nice. So what are hobbies for you?
Fly fishing. Is one, but I actually probably should have said I don't have any because I have three kids.
What are the ages of your kids?
I have 9 and 6 and 4, soon to be
5 and
next week.
7 for me. So yeah,
it's
similar season of life.
basketball is something I've enjoyed. Although I think I'm aging out in terms of that being a relevant hobby. I'm not as quick as I was.
Put you on the senior team at camp. And,
yes. Yeah. I've recently gone back to a morning game, and a couple of my crossover moves, I'm like, man, the defender is still there in front of me. Wasn't as good as I once remembered. So, but yeah, for me, certainly my kids take up a lot of my time outside of work, and I enjoy that. But whenever I have a day alone, getting outside, hiking, fishing, camping is definitely what I would choose to do.
Well, Northwest Arkansas is a beautiful spot for that too.
Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about some of your day-to-day responsibilities. You're leading a team, you're doing execution. I think we have similar roles in that type of position. I'd like to know how you balance it and what your approach is to being a CEO.
Sure. Well, I mentioned our original vision was, hey, let's be less than 10 people, shorts and flip-flops. It's changed a bit. We have over 60 people. Wow. We've got 3 offices. My business partners and I clarified our roles about a year ago where I took on the CEO role. But prior to that, we just managed really by committee and by consensus. And so really that role of trying to be a directional leader as a CEO is about 10 months old for me. So I'm learning. I'm awesome. A rookie. But for me, you know, anytime you have an organization that has scaled beyond yourself, a big part of your work is the people that work within your organization. And so the things that I have tried to focus on as I've taken on this role is really setting a clear direction and inspiring and encouraging them towards that direction and removing any barriers that stand in our way. And then trying to empower and coach and train folks to continue to grow into the roles that we need them to be. And so I'm a big believer that a lot of times as companies go through growth cycles like our company has, growing your business at the same rate as your people is obviously ideal. doesn't always happen that way.
Right.
Some of us have been in business cycles where our people are ready for more and the business isn't there.
Right.
At Harvest Group, we've gone through seasons where the business has grown faster than our people were ready. Being a company that wants to enable people to grow, our initial reaction to those cycles is not, let's go hire an expert outside the company, but really, how can we help coach and train and call people up to more.
Yeah.
And so that's the cycle that we've been in most recently, has been a lot of fast growth. And so increasingly my time has been spent training and coaching and empowering people to step up into new leadership roles.
Wow. So tell me, I'm reading Deep Work right now. You may have read that book. It's a big book, so I'm having to listen to it when I drive to Little Rock and back, but
if it's a big book, it's probably on my nightstand.
I've got several like that
crying out to me right now
with a stack.
Yes.
Yeah. Yesterday I told my wife, because we're in a reading mode with this consulting group right now. And so I'm listening to some, I have some, and then on my nightstand, I have a few, and I looked at my wife and said, oh man, I still have to read those.
Yes.
It's supposed to be enjoyable. But Deep Work talks about the shallow work. And then those that we are the easiest to respond to, which in your role and my role too, those things pop up in your role too, LJ, and they pop up all day long. And so how have you seen the most effective way to do the deep work, which you have to do sometimes with your strategic growth as a partner, as a CEO, and then also to be able to take care of those tasks? How do you find that kind of balance?
It's a challenge.
Yeah.
And I think one of the tactical things I've done over the last couple of years is make sure that my day and my time is not dictated by email. And so I know I may be late to the game on that. People listening are like, that's pretty standard. But I think when work gets busy and you're growing and there's a lot going on in your world, it's just so easy. That's the way that we communicate. And so I've had to get comfortable personally not responding to emails. I used to kind of take pride in my speed of response. Some, I don't know if you're like this, like is your inbox, you know, past page one, you know, past the break? Does that make you nervous?
Yes.
Like me. So I've had to get past that and realize that as your organization grows in scope, there literally isn't enough time in the day to do it all. And so to your point, you've got to evaluate what's the type of work I need to do and make sure that I'm not just doing the next thing, but I'm doing the most important thing. And so I've definitely failed at that a lot. But when I'm at my best, it's trusting people in our organization to do those things that we've asked them to do. Mm-hmm. The people that sometimes are coming at you with their agenda that's not your agenda, being okay with being silent. Or say no, and get the time you need to do, as you say, the deep work.
That's great. And we talked this morning. In fact, we just printed chapter 2 that we're going to go over on Monday with our team to go over some of those exact things. If you know Steve Graves, Dr. Sure. Steve Graves, he always talks about not living by your inbox, and it's easier said than done. And I think I lost the battle yesterday, which is when I started printing out those pages.
Well, the next one is the calendar, right? And so, you know, I think anyone that's leading a fast growing or a young organization that becomes more sought after, or you just have an imprint in the community, you get requests from all angles.
Right.
And for me, like I enjoy giving people my time and helping them, but you have to again kind of get comfortable saying no. And in my personality, that can feel pretentious.
Right.
When you wake up to, I don't have enough time to get it done. And those choices become more apparent. And for me, I feel kind of a rock in a hard place a lot of days because my family is very important to me. And so I'm not the type of person that's going to, you know, work long hours consistently day after day after day and neglect them. So that's my rock. It's like, that's my priority, but I also really want to do my work with excellence and lead the company with excellence. And I care about our people. I care about our clients. As I mentioned earlier, in my worldview, I'm doing this unto my God. And so that intersection can clash quite a bit. And the only way I've found to reconcile that is to start saying no to some things.
That's great. Yeah. I love that. You mentioned earlier seasons, one of the consultants that I work with, Aaron Walker, who's in and out of our lives a lot here, talks about one, balance being a misnomer. Mm-hmm. Whenever
whenever we're asked about that, and then talks about the seasons of life and how to split it up. So I love that you're sharing that. So tell me, what's next for you? What are some of the big things coming up for you on the horizon?
You know, for us at the Harvest Group, we turned 10 years old this past fall. And so it's really kind of been an interesting time of reflection for us to look back, give thanks to God, thank the people that have helped us get there. You mentioned Steve Graves. We actually had a gratitude party to celebrate 10 years. And we invited seven or eight people that outside of our company that really helped us these first 10 years. And so we're kind of coming out of that season of reflecting back. And now we're beginning to turn our eyesight out further than we ever have. I think the first 10 years, we really planned on an annual basis. And so as we turn 10 years old, we're beginning to pick our eyes up further down the horizon and say, what are the next 5 years, 10 years look like? And we probably did the first 10 wrong. I know we were probably supposed to be doing that the whole time, but, for us, we're just waking up to that. And so, so it's been a time of dreaming and thinking and trying to break down paradigms that we may have built up in our mind that need to change. Industry that we're in is rapidly changing, like a lot of industries today. And so beginning to imagine, what is the future going to look like and how can we be positioned? Mm,
that's awesome. So we are the Business Leadership Series. So I've got to ask you about leadership. What is your style of leadership? You've talked to us some about it, but I mean, we read the Go Giver Leader and all these different books and that talk about the servant leadership. We talk about that all the time. What does good leadership mean to you?
The main principle that I would say that I've learned is just to not treat every person the same. And so the mistake that I often make, and I think a lot of us make, is we lead people how we want to be led. And so those of us that want to be empowered will empower people. Sometimes people aren't ready to be empowered. Others of us want strong direction and clear instructions on how we're to be led. What I've experienced is when I look across the people that I work with daily is they're all in different places. Mm-hmm. And even within a certain person, depending on the task, they're in a different place. And so I think the real art and science of leadership and management is really studying who you're interacting with. And it takes time and it's a skill, but learning what do they need help with? Where are they at in their development? And then giving them what they need. And I'm not saying that I nail that every day, but for me, studying where people are at and trying to treat them all differently and treat even situations within a certain person differently is kind of the key. I am a recovering, you know, founder, if you will.
Right.
And so I've learned that I hold things, pretty tight. You know, when you start a company out of your dining room, it's hard to let go. And so,
yes,
so I'm learning that. And my the people that we have are so worthy of the empowerment and letting them lead And so it's not at all an issue with talent. I'm fine. It's really an issue with me of being just a recovering founder that needs to let others go. One of my business partners joked with me last week. He said, "Sometimes I think we should just go home and let these talented people that we've hired that are different than us, that have in some cases better skill in certain areas than us, let them lead." And so I'm learning about that myself right now the difficulty of that.
That's powerful though. That's a testament to what you guys have built the right way though, on the foundation and growth that you've had to be able to build something to the point where you could possibly step away. And that's what you're supposed to do if you're building a company right. From what I've read anyway.
Yeah.
If what I've seen is the ability of them and also to know. One of the definitions of servant leadership with CEO Global on the courses that we studied, I got to guest lecture on one. I read, I said, "I'm not a servant leader. You have me teaching this." So I learned more than the students probably. So I was sharing all of my shortcomings the whole time I talked, learning right there with them. But one of them was a good leader knows when to step out of the way and let the company grow past him because you're building something that's a legacy and a value for future generations. And that's leaving really a big legacy and a mark.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And so for us, as founders of something that, has grown and that we've attracted great talent, that's for us, I think part of a turning of the page, if you will, in our next 10 years is this going to take different approaches to how we grow the next 10 years and, the next section of growth. And so I think as leaders, the best ones have a repertoire of activities and approaches, and they can shift gears within that. And so right. I'm trying to diversify my leadership style in those ways.
That's fun though. I mean, I see some leaders of small businesses and large who never evolve, mm-hmm. and that's okay. They run good companies, and in the course of doing close to 100 interviews here, just specifically for this project, we see so many different leadership styles, and some are top down and they listen or they're out, and others are more go giver leader. You can't push a rope, you pull it. It's about having confidence in yourself before you can be humble with your team. And then, so there's so many different styles, but I love, my favorite are those that continue to evolve. Cause that's the kind of leader I want to be as well. Absolutely. Is continuing to learn. And there's just an evolution of the process depending on where you're at. So,
right. And it's, there's an art and a science to it both. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of science and study behind diversifying your leadership style, but it's an art too. And it takes work. And I think a lot of times when you're a leader and you evolve and you grow to the title that we have of CEO, a lot of people rest in that status or the ego of that
right.
and become complacent.
Right.
And so my goal is just to continue to push myself and learn. And some of the folks that counsel us have talked to us about a lot of small businesses kind of go up against a ceiling, and that ceiling a lot of times is predicated on the founders,
right?
Like it's their yes. personal ceiling.
Yes.
And they either don't evolve, don't grow to get to break through that ceiling, or they need to hand the reins over to somebody else that can take the company on the next leg of the journey. And so we're not ready to hand the reins over completely. So we're trying to evolve and grow to be the leaders the company needs the next in.
Very cool. Yeah. So the last question I have is tell me about, I've got a mastermind group that I just started in recently where I get to learn from some Aaron Walker, some other really great people that keep me accountable and my balance and other things like that. And exercise, diet, all those things, family time,
yes.
work goals that have been life-changing. I'm a very driven person. But that accountability and that kind of reining me back in and also keeping the owner from being full of themselves, mm-hmm. which I don't think that I am, but it can be easily, you can easily go down the wrong track, like you said, where your ceiling is yourself. What kind of consulting or mentorship and accountability have you had in your life, and how, what kind of impact has that made for you to stay grounded and to keep focused?
It's huge. I mean, it's played a huge part in my role in my life. I feel like, and when I look at my career, I've been given opportunities and responsibilities before I was ready, and so that has really led me to lean on other people very, very naturally. My personality is probably not driven towards that, but because of the circumstances of my career and those responsibilities, it's just I've leaned in that direction, and
right.
it's been phenomenally important to who I am personally and professionally, and so. I mean, there's probably 20 names, you know, on that list. And so it's everything from business consultants to friends to peers to people outside of my industry that I just respect in their character and their family life and who they are. It's been my dad. And then most importantly, it's been my wife. I don't always follow her counsel and advice, but I've learned that's a mistake, when I don't, because she has great discernment and she knows me better than anyone else.
Right.
And so, but I do believe, when I'm alone, that's dangerous. And I think that man's not meant to be alone. And so being in community, having mentors, having accountability, whether those that's a person that's older than you or right. whether it's a peer, in different stages of my life, it's looked differently. It's been a formal coach that's older and more advanced in their career. It's been a friend that I ran with that was a peer, but that knew me and would ask me hard questions. And so I don't think it has to look one way. The other thing I think about mentorship and accountability is it doesn't have to be forever.
Right.
I try to tell folks that when they're looking for a mentor, when you're approaching someone, it doesn't need to be your lifelong friend forever. It could be that right. person has something to offer you for a season.
Right.
And as I'm becoming more of the person on the other end of that request of, hey, would you spend time with me? I'm trying to also set that expectation like, hey, I would love to. Let's do this for a season and then see where it leads. But definitely mentorship and accountability has been very key in my life.
It's great wisdom. Yeah, we're not meant to live in isolation. I've heard it said, and you have too, I'm sure that we're the sum of the five people that we hang out with as well. So it's great to get counsel and those that have the character and have the experience and the wisdom that we would like to have.
Absolutely.
And we don't know what we don't know. I love that. So last question I have for you on the mentorship angle, though, is I realized one day, and I'm 41, and I'm late to the game again, because I was more of an entrepreneur than I thought I was a leader, and then woke up one day and was like, oops, I guess I'm a leader, right? And so some entrepreneur wired people are that way. We just want to create and tinker, and then we go,
I have a bunch of people to lead.
Exactly. So, and then I also realized one day that I was not the young guy who was supposed to look for the mentor. I was also supposed to have people that I was investing in as well.
Right.
And that took me a while too. I'm just going to be real honest. And so how important to you do you feel is it that you also are looking to give back and pull those up that maybe they're not quite ready, but you identify something in them that you want to give them leadership and responsibilities to let them grow into? Have you been able to practice that as well?
I have. And it's been, it's kind of the quintessential wisdom of you become more of the receiver than the giver
right.
in those situations. And so, again, I've done that on informal kind of one-on-one basis for short periods of time. I've done it more formally over a year with a group of young people. We do it within our company where we have leaders that we all kind of offer ourselves up as into mentor groups that we're actually going to rotate through and give people again that opportunity to change the season and go get something else from another leader here this fall, this spring. But it is important. I think one, you know, you hear the kind of the give back sentiment of, gosh, I've had these men and women that have poured into me. I want to turn around and give that back. But again, I found as you were sharing about your teaching experience, it's great accountability
right.
to sit in front of a person or a group of people and get asked questions and
be honest about it too.
Be honest. Yeah. And, one of my favorite experiences in this setting was, a year ago, a group of people wanted to talk about work-life balance. And earlier I joked, is my wife going to be listening to this? So actually I did something maybe radical. I said, yes, we will talk about that, but you're not going to talk about it with me. You're going to talk about it with Kate. And so I sent Kate to the mentorship group to talk to them. And so what they needed to hear from was from her. Like, what does she feel about it? What does she think about it? What's her perspective? I was just going to affirm probably their perspective of, gosh, yeah, it's hard. And so it is big. But I think the thing for folks that maybe haven't done that or kind of feeling ill-equipped is, you're going to receive when you do that. And the fact that you don't know all the answers shouldn't prevent you from jumping in.
Right. That's great. Any parting words of wisdom, anything that's top of mind for you right now that you want to share with us?
I would love to thank you for doing this. I think the idea of talking about business and leadership with practitioners that are in the mix, the entrepreneurs that are doing it, is really important for our business community. I've long thought that other industries like the healthcare profession and legal profession, they have some stuff going on that's really
right.
cool. They know how to give in moments of crisis and charity, and they've got professional organizations that really kind of hold them together and set right. standards and provide this. And I'm excited to see, just from a grassroots level, the business community doing it through folks like you. So
awesome. And hey,
doing it.
You're learning to say no. And I appreciate you not saying no to being our guest today. That's awesome. Yes. Ross Cully, thank you so much for being our guest, CEO, co-founder of the Harvest Group. And we look forward to continuing to watch the amazing things that are going on in your life.
Thank you.
Thank you, buddy.
You've been listening to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. This interview was designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be.